star so bright. Pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kinda snuffy, cold chill up your spine. You'll get your ass moving, sun will burn in daylight.
Howdy there, I'm Matt McKinley and we're burning daylight. Welcome to Burning Daylight, the only podcast for the working cowboy.
Well, welcome back, Daylight Burners. Happy New Year once again. This is the Friggin' Farm and Ranch Report for Monday, January 8th, 2024. I hope you all had a good holiday. Hope 2024 has treated you well. I know if you're in the middle part of the country, you're getting a little bit of snow. We had some our own selves here, but it wasn't anything like we had beginning last year. So hopefully we get some more, and hopefully it stays up top. And anyways, that's what's going on here. But it's been a minute since I've been on here solo, and there's a reason for that. It's busy, and I also care about the quality of this show that I put out, although it may not seem so sometimes. But the last like quarter of the year, in particular, I wasn't real happy with some of the ones that I put out, and that they were fine, but I don't want to put out fine. I want to put out something that I'm proud of, and not that I'm not proud of it. I'm just not as proud, I suppose. So anyways, that being said, this is the first Farm and Ranch Report of the year. And this is one of the areas where I've been looking to really focus on and make sure that I do a good job, because I don't think there's enough, programs out there that tell a good story about what's going on in agriculture, particularly on the cattle and beef side of things. So I want to try to do a better job of that going forward. So please bear with me and let me know where I can improve and what you like and all that stuff. It all helps. Sharing it around is extremely important for me. It's an election year. That's going to factor heavily into a lot of what we talk about, because like every other presidential election, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. So let's, I guess just factor that in as we're going forward. But also with that comes a lot of scrutiny on social media, which is where I get most of my promotion, or where I do most of my promotion. And, so they're going to lock down pretty hard on stuff that goes against, the administration's agenda. And I could tell you that for sure. I can't even log in on my desktop to Instagram, except through my personal page. So, the first hour of every episode will be on my Instagram live on my personal page at MakerMac85. And then I'll also post it up there as a, on my feed as a video. So, but it will go live when, it won't be live for you. Like I won't go live as I'm recording it on Instagram. I'll go live later when I post it to all my other channels. But if you're on Patreon, that's the only true way to get on the live stream, is to join through patreon.com/burning/burning daylight. Starting at $5 a month there. But that's where I try to live stream everything. And, but then eventually it will be on Instagram on my personal page. I've done a couple there. I apologize about the football episode not posting on audio. I had it scheduled, but it did not post for some reason. By the time I realized, it was already halfway through Sunday, and who cares at that point? So I didn't, it was on YouTube, all the video stuff, but not audio. So apologize for that. I have to pay closer attention there. But also for the show going forward, it may not be as scheduled as it used to be, because I was having a hard time keeping up and putting out, you know, what I thought was quality content 3 times a week. And my kids are getting older and more active into stuff. And yeah, I'm just busier. And I don't want to put out shitty stuff. So like my history episodes, I'm going to take the time they deserve. So I'm still working on the Mormon stuff. I'm still working on the history of the meatpacking industry. I will be doing a full series on the history of the cattle ranching industry in the United States. And that one's going to be a fascinating one. And I'm going to have to kind of do them somewhat simultaneously, or like do one and then the other, because they're so obviously interconnected. But it's hard to tell the story of the meatpacking industry without telling the history of the cattle business. And it's hard to tell that business without telling the story of the banking sector in the U.S. because they're all intertwined and intermingled. And like capitalism and free enterprise and then government corruption, it's all a very complex story, and it's fascinating all the same. So I will be continuing on those, but don't expect them to come out just very very rapidly, I guess. So because they take time to really tell the story correctly. It takes time to research it all. So that's what I'll be doing. I will be spending some more time focusing on nutrition and fitness, as gay and dumb and as everybody seems to be doing it nowadays. It seems like that. I don't care. I think it's important. I think men are too soft today, including myself, and I'm working on that. And I think in the agriculture business, we have been duped by big government, big agriculture, big corporations in general. And we're essentially slave to a welfare state, and one which the welfare state that exists for farming is propping up the system of bullshit food that is essentially poisoning the country. So I'm going to talk more about nutrition because of that, which will also entail some historical dives into how we got to where we are here. And I don't know if that interests anybody. I think it will. I've got more reactions on my I guess what you'd call fuckboy pictures with where I posted a picture of myself in my underwear. But I want everybody to see what the process of change is from doing all this stuff, because we got a real problem with fatties in the country. And it's not that I hate any fat people. Fat people are usually the funniest, but they don't live very long. And that can be a problem. And we're just real soft, and it looks like we're headed in the war somewhere. And we ain't ready to fight it. So anyways, I think I just, it seemed like a good enough time to go ahead and try to get in shape and be as able-bodied as I possibly can. And I'm not going to give advice, I don't guess, unless anybody truly asks for it. But I'm going to let people know what I've done and how it's worked and how it hasn't worked. And it's, I guess it'll be a good advertisement for First Form. Because that's the products that I use, and that's the products I get a commission for anybody that buys them. Using my link. firstform.com/burnindaylight. That'd be 1STPHORM.com/burnindaylight. But that being said, I'm not doing it to hawk the products. I don't care if you guys buy them. I just happen to use them. I think they're really good, and they've helped me pretty tremendously. I feel really good after this regimen that I've been on, and I think you guys will be too. So if you have any questions about the stuff, please give me a message or an email, matt@burnin-daylight.com. I will be setting up a new website here pretty soon. I think I have the domain to moveyourass.com, which is a little easier to just for going forward. I know about, I've got my website. I've had it for almost 5 years now, but it's a little bit of a mouthful to say. So moveyourass.com, I think will work out pretty good. So I'm gonna work on getting a new website up there and try to drive some traffic to that, because I'm trying to make everything more in-house if I can and not rely so much on social media and whatnot. But anyways, that all being said, just it's going to be a little different this year going forward, but I think the quality will be worth the wait in between episodes. And doing this for almost 5 years, I also have a pretty extensive back catalog, so I will be reposting old episodes as I see fit. I know I've had several requests to repost, because there's a period of time in there where I was switching platforms several episodes got lost on the audio side of things, but I still have them. I just got to put them back up. So I got one to talk about High Jolly and the U.S. Camel Corps, to repost that one. Joe Drinkwalter, appreciate you shouting that one out. So I will be posting that later this week. So that being said, I will still try to keep the three while I'm still researching. So we'll get a few old episodes that I feel like are worth reposting. And then, of course, I'll still do some episodes. Miles Fidinas will be back on. I'm getting ready to do another show with him. He just got back from Africa and said he's got some awesome stories to tell, and I can't wait to hear him. So all that, Fence Post Politics, and then the Friggin' Farm and Ranch Report. So house cleaning out of the way. I know that was a solid 10-minute spiel, but hey, you know me. I'm not exactly short-winded when it comes to this stuff, so. Let's go ahead and get into it. So, this is the market report. This is from National Beef Wire as of Friday PM. I haven't looked at the market today, so I'm a little behind, but that's okay. Bear with me. Live cattle finished down 90 cents at 173.40 last week. Feeder cattle down $1.50, 224.15. Hogs were up $1.42.5 to $76.375. On the grain side, corn was down $5.75. Soybeans down $11.25, and wheat's up $2.50. Cotton up 7 cents. Dow finished, I guess, up $25.77. NASDAQ up $13.77. The S&P was up 56, and it says stocks recover as U.S. economic reports suggest a soft landing. So market dropped pretty heavily at the beginning of last week, but it rallied at the end. Election year, you're gonna see some. I think you're gonna see the economy appear to improve slightly. They're probably going to drop interest rates a couple times and try to make the economics look as cushy as they can going into election season, because Joe Biden's underwater on his approval rating. So, and that it's always the economy. It comes back to the economy. And that was kind of one constant throughout, like, the craziness of the Trump years, is when it came down to 2020, it was COVID and the economy, and the economy was wrecked because of COVID, and not so much COVID itself, but the government reaction to COVID. And but that being said, the economy tanked, and that's what swung the presidential election overall. And yeah, the economy's in the shitter, regardless of how rosy they try to paint the pictures. I was talking with my coworker the other day. I bought a Bic lighter the other day. For my entire life that I can recall, also I say my entire adult life, since since I was able to legally purchase a pack of cigarettes and a cigar or something, and buy a lighter to light it with at the big convenience stores, the big chain ones, they cost 99 cents. At like your smaller town mom and pop type convenience stores, they cost $1.29. This one was $2.29 the other day, so almost 100% increase. Eggs, milk, bread, everything's way more expensive. That now they've slowed the rate of inflation down, I suppose, but it's still inflating. There's no doubt about it. And they're still spending more and more and more money. And the stock market's probably gonna hit some new highs. But it's probably will crash at some point. I don't know when. I don't know what that's gonna look like, but it's not gonna be real pretty, I wouldn't imagine. But that being said, the stock market did rebound a little bit. So yeah, I don't know. You can expect some things to get slightly better maybe as we head into the election, but I don't know. Energy prices, crude oil was up 170 to 73.89 a barrel. Heating oil's up a little bit. Natural gas was up a little bit. Choice beef, on the box beef side, Choice was up 126. Select was up 71. So we got 277.16 on the Choice. 259.53 on the Select, with the Choice Select spread being $17.63. Cattle trade, the cash trades at a standstill. Texas Panhandle live FOB purchases traded at 172. Kansas live FOB purchases traded at 172 to 173. And Nebraska been slow on light to moderate demand. Live FOB purchases were steady, mostly steady at 173. Dress delivered market was 274 to 275. Western Corn Belt negotiated cash trade has been slow on light demand. Most recent live FOB purchases was Thursday at 175, and dress purchases from 274 to 275. Cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. for feedlots with a capacity of 1,000 head or more totaled 12 million head on December 1st, 2023. So inventory was up 3%. Placements were down. Inventory was 3% above December 1st, 2022. Placements in feedlots during November totaled 1.87 million head, or 2% below 2022. That's that shrinking cow herd, as you see again. Like, they're just more and more. They're still, you know, lot of cattle on feed, but like a lot less cattle being placed on feed, because there's just not that many of them to be out there. Net placements were 1.81 million head during November. Placements of cattle and calves weighing less than 600 pounds were 535,000. Six weights at 440,000. Seven weights 380,000. Eight weights 288, and nine weights were 140,000 head. Marketing of fed cattle during November totaled 1.75 million head, 7% below 2022. National Drought Monitor says, welcome to 2024 with paltry snowpack in the west and drenching rains in the east. In between, drought and dryness worsened in the south, southern Midwest, and interior southeast. However, New Mexico, Nebraska, and Illinois saw improvements this past week. So January 2nd, 27.59% of the U.S. and Puerto Rico and 32.9% of the lower 48 states are in drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. We are not here in Nevada, so we're in good shape, but you get to Arizona, New Mexico. New Mexico still got some pretty extreme drought. Texas, parts of it, but like Louisiana, Alabama, and Tennessee in particular, there's some really bad drought through there. Florida's okay in the coast. But as you get more into the central area of the kind of like the South and the Midwest, it's pretty dry, but I still like to get some people together on that. Cause I'm just not sure what dry looks like to them compared to the desert, you know? Exports, net sales of 9,500 metric tons for 2023 were up noticeably from the previous week and up 69% from the prior 4-week average. Increases primarily for China, to 3,200 metric tons. Japan, 2,200 metric tons. Net sales of 7,100 metric tons for 2024 were primarily for Taiwan. So livestock comments by Dr. Andrew Griffith. The choice beef cutout price has collapsed this week as consumer demand shifts from high quality middle meats to end cuts. The market is following a seasonal pattern as society moves out of the holiday season. Consumer consumption patterns shift during the winter months with less grilling and more slow cooking. Men and consumers are not as concerned. If a roast grades choice or select because the method in which they prepare the roast is more forgiving than steak cuts. It's clear consumer demand remains strong for beef given the select cutout price did not falter compared to the choice beef, but the choice select spread may be a better gauge of beef demand. It is common for choice select spread to narrow to nearly zero during the winter months, but this did not happen in 2023 and unlikely in 2024. Choice select spread is expected to remain wide from a seasonal standpoint as consumers have proved time and time again that choice beef or higher quality is preferred and they're willing to pay for it. So you're not going to see as many people buying prime ribs this time of year. Just that's pretty common. Once the new year hits, it's kind of back to, you know, it's like comfort meals. Cattle slaughter, weekly slaughter report of 556,000 head compared to 508,000 last week and 565,000 last year. Year-to-date slaughter at 556,000, down 1.5%. So that kind of wraps up the market. I guess not a ton going on as we're just cracking into the new year, but you know, it's sure to pick up. There's a lot of high drama to unfold this year, I'm sure. Speaking of high drama, we've got a lot of drama surrounding the wolf reintroduction in my home state of Colorado. And there's a new podcast out there that I've been listening to here lately, and but it's Rachel Gable, and I can't remember the other fellow's name, but Rachel Gable works for the Fence Post, and what is the name of that show? But they've only got a handful of episodes out, but it's pretty decent, and they covered this wolf topic quite a bit over their first couple of episodes. And so it's called Pro Ag Podcast, and that is I forget the guy's name, but it's Rachel Gable and somebody else. I believe he runs the sale barn there in Sterling, Colorado. So anyways, but the way these wolves were reintroduced to Colorado was really, really shiesty. There was a whole lot of underhanded stuff. Like when they released them, they tried to do it in secret. I mean, they had photographers in there, but they failed to notify the ranchers in the area. They're already seeing these wolves they cover some ground. They were supposed to be from herds that had not been attacking cattle or livestock before. Every single one of them came of the Oregon. The ones that came out of Oregon had been part of packs that had attacked livestock in the past. So it's just a matter of time before they start in on the cattle herds. But this is a picture of a collared wolf that he got a fella, Todd Schmidt of Highmark Builders in Kremlin, Colorado. So there's a lot going on with that. There's I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Well, outside of a wolf, eventually is gonna end up getting shot, I would imagine. But we'll see. But I would recommend tuning into that Pro Ag podcast if you're interested in hearing kind of some pretty timely updates on it. They've done quite a bit of reporting, and Rachel Gable has wrote several articles in the Fence Post and I forget where else, Denver Gazette or something like that. I forget exactly where at, but anyway, it's a hot button issue for sure. Particularly for the people that it affects. I mean, it's one of the really big flaws in democracy is when you get a whole bunch of people that vote on this issue that it really doesn't affect them at all, and then yet the people that vote against it affects them in a potentially very negative way, and it's kind of crazy how quickly people are to put the livelihood of a predatory animal over the livelihood of hardworking people. Anyways, this is an article from the Western Ag Reporter. U.S. unemployment grows as the H-2A program expands. As of 2023, this is by Tara Ochsner. As of October 23, the official U.S. unemployment rate reached 3.9%, which equates to about 161.2 million citizens. That seems incredibly high. Citizens. That's like half the population. And maybe that was supposed to be 16.1. I don't know. I'm going to say that's a typo. But 161.2 million citizens, that's false. I think that's a typo. I'm going to go with 16.2 million. So, according to the Department of Labor, paradoxically, the number of H-2A positions, which are temporarily foreign-sourced agricultural opportunities certified by the Department of Labor, increased by 2% in 2023. Despite the availability of unemployed U.S. citizens, many farmers and livestock producers across the country are becoming increasingly more reliant on the H-2A program, despite its continuing inflating costs. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist Virginia Nye, over 100,000 more H-2A positions were certified in fiscal year 2023 than in fiscal year 2020, despite an increase of nearly 19% in the national average adverse effect wage rate, or the AEWR. The AEWR is the required minimum wage that must be paid to an H-2A employee, and these rates vary by region. At $17.55 per hour, the national average 2024 AEWR breaks the previous record by 93 cents an hour. So these temporary migrant employees, migrant workers come over, the national average is $17.55 an hour. And and farmers are willing to pay this for migrant workers, but can't find any domestic workers, I guess. Like $17.55, that's average. Like that's not bad for, I don't know, it seems like for a low skilled job, it seems like not bad. Like that's where are all the high school kids to man, if I was making $17.55 an hour when I was in high school, holy shit. I made $7.25 and I thought I was rolling in dough. That one, and also there's another part. Okay, Wyoming and Montana, Idaho all have $86 increase in 2024. Dakotas, Kansas, and Nebraska will see a 96 cents an hour raise. Colorado, Utah, and Nevada will increase by 26 cents an hour. Along with providing housing and covering travel costs, H-2A employees are now required to pay overtime, along with several other new costly regulations. So the migrant workers get overtime, but your average American does not. If you work in the ag industry is notoriously exempt from having to pay overtime, which I guess, as an agricultural worker, I'm not real, thrilled by that law. It wouldn't bother me if your job chose not to pay overtime, but I don't like the little loophole that it just in ag it doesn't matter at all. Like at least production agriculture, because if you're in the meatpacking industry, you get paid time and a half and double time on Sundays, or at least that's what I got when I was working at the BPI facility there in Kansas. But that tells you how shitty that job was, because I was like, I could not wait to get done with it. But it paid good. It really paid good. So, I mean, I guess I'm just as guilty of that as anybody else is that's skipping the good paying job, because it sucks. But, I mean, yeah, it always seemed kind of crazy to me that the agriculture was the one exempt industry from overtime. You don't think about it. It doesn't bother you too much until you hear something about that. And you're like, huh, those fuckers get overtime. Well, you guys are getting paid. Nonetheless, many states experienced exponential growth in H-2A contracts in 2023. North Dakota was in the top five for states who increased H-2A certified positions in 2023, with 714 more than 2022. So even though they're having to pay overtime and they still can't find domestic, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what to make of all of these deals. It just, I think it goes back to my original preamble. This is like, men are soft here. And, there are a lot of people who are more than willing to just to milk some sort of welfare program instead of going and getting a shitty job and earning your wage instead of, or earning your living instead of letting the government take care of it. But it's not neither here nor there, but we'll move on to another. I guess just to say, like, the jobs are out there if you want them. Like, if you really want to get, a decent job, they're out there to be had. They're not easy. Like, you don't get to be real lazy on those good paying jobs most of the time. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird one. If you ask me, that whole process, the immigration process is kind of messed up, and I don't know how you fix it, but we found out that just opening the borders and not really trying to stop people is not the best option. It seems to be a little bit of a mess here over the past 3 years, but I'm sure we'll get into that some more. But this is following the trend of several states across the country. Missouri bans Chinese-owned farmland near military bases. We talked about one in Arkansas where Sarah Huckabee Sanders made Syngenta divest of their holdings in Arkansas because of their ties to China. So this is another one. Well, But I guess it doesn't apply to pre-existing ownership. It only, I guess, applies. Let's dive into it. So, Missouri Governor Mike Parson on Tuesday issued an executive order to ban companies and individuals from China and other adversarial countries from owning farmland near the state's military operations. Any citizen, resident, or business from a foreign adversary such as China, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Russia, or Venezuela is banned from owning agricultural land within 10 miles of all military facilities in the state, according to Missouri's Executive Order 2401. A news conference, Parsons said the order safeguards our military and intelligence assets, prevents security threats to our state, and gives Missourians greater peace of mind. The order does not affect existing landowners. So if they're already owned by Chinese companies, they can keep them, I guess. Missouri issued the order amid heightened concern about foreign ownership of farmland, especially from China. While China represents less than 1% of the U.S. total U.S. agricultural land owned by foreign investors, holdings have increased in recent years, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture data. This article is from Agriculture Dive, by the way. Pretty decent agriculture publication, news site for ag news. It's pretty decent, I would say. I get quite a bit of stuff from them. This is due largely to land purchases made by Chinese billionaire Sun Guangxin in Texas. Reporting disclosures from Smithfield Foods also boosted numbers after the company was acquired by China-based WH Group in 2013. Top states with farmland owned by China include Texas at 159,640 acres, North Carolina with 44,776, and Missouri with 43,071 acres, according to the latest 2022 data from the USDA. However, these estimates are likely undervalued because if multiple investors are listed on the USDA's foreign disclosure forms and no primary country is identified, the holdings are recorded as no predominant country. Several states passed stricter laws banning China and other countries from purchasing farmland last year, despite the countries owning little to no acreage. Arkansas recently enforced its ban against international seed developer Syngenta because of its ties to China, ordering the company to divest of its land holdings for national security reasons. I mentioned that before. So, critics, however, say these bans could exacerbate an already strained relationship between the U.S. and China and damage trade relations with the world's largest agriculture importer. I'm not super worried about China and U.S. trade relations at the moment. We're still pretty heavily on that Chinese tip, and China is pretty heavily chugging some U.S. dong as well. Like, it's a mutually gross and beneficial relationship that we have. The China in particular, they have to import a ton of stuff to feed their people. There's a lot of them over there, and we don't make shit anymore, so we have to buy it from there until we can start making our own again, which I think will eventually happen at some point. I think it has to, or we'll move it to India or something, but I think at some point we're going to have to start making shit here again, or we're going to be kind of screwed. Like, if you can't produce your own shit, you really can't go pissing off the people that make it, and because then they'll just stop making it, and then we don't have shit, and it just kind of doesn't make sense. So I'm not real worried about China at the moment, but like, we keep poking that direction, and it doesn't make much sense to me. I think that's going to be something to pay attention to, is how China starts to react to all of this, because we've been poking them pretty hard, and I tend to kind of agree with these bills, though. Like, I'm very much a free market economy type of guy, I also live in the real world where we have a country, a nation state, if you will. And we have to take care of our own, and therefore, like, we have to grow our own food, and it makes no sense for me. Like, it's fine if our country, if our companies want to export, you know, excess product overseas, that's fine. Make your money. But don't do it at the, we can't do that at the hindrance of the, by hindering our own people. You know, we can't grow all of our food here to only to give it away to somebody else, or allow some other country to grow all their own food here. And when we have, I don't know, it just, like, you got to take care of your own. And it makes no sense to me that a foreign government or foreign owned company owning massive parts of our food supply, particularly in the meat packing side of things. So a lot of Brazilian ownership. And that just, it makes no sense to me. But we'll see how this goes with China, how it affects our relationship with them. And it could get spicy. If things get real spicy over there, you know, I don't know. Things could get weird. Speaking of weird, this is Prop 12 in California. That rule takes full effect in this year. All pork products sold in California must adhere to regulations that prohibit the use of swine gestation crates as of January 1st, 2024. After a temporary adjustment period, Proposition 12 is fully implemented in California, meaning all pork sold in the state must come from farms that comply with larger animal housing requirements. As of January 1st, 2024, pork growers and distributors are required to have valid certificates of compliance, and covered products must be from compliant producers, according to the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Retailers were allowed to sell non-compliant pork already in the supply chain through the end of 2023. Implementation marks a win for animal rights advocates, and the ballot measure was overwhelmingly passed by voters in 2018. And the veal and egg provisions have been in place for years. But pushback from the pork industry delayed some of the measure's implementation until the Supreme Court ruled in favor last year. So, it established unprecedented prohibitions on selling food from farm animals raised in tight housing confinements. It applies not only to farms in California, but also to farms outside the state, too. For the pork industry in particular, gestation crates are widely used for efficiency and safety reasons. They are metal pens about 7 feet long that house individual breeding sows for the entire gestation period, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. 10 states, including California, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Ohio, have passed laws prohibiting their use. So, I'm not sure how I feel about this one in general. I kind of think maybe it's a decent thing. I'm not much on government intervention, as you know, but also I think we could do something with the pork and the chicken industry to make it a little bit more natural of a process for an animal to live. You know, like cattle, at least for the most part, outside of some of your dairy cattle, they're out at pasture most of their life, and you know they come in for the last couple months to get fat, get fed on grain, and before they go to slaughter. But and I think that even that process could be revamped a little bit, particularly with the way the consumer demand has gone like that. It would behoove producers to do so, because the money's there. People have kind of they've proven over the years that they're willing to pay extra for it. So it's not like, I mean, it makes sense for people that if you can get by with it, it makes sense for you to do so. And then particularly on the hogs and chicken side of thing, it's just kind of gross, and it's. I don't have a, outside of just the mass amount of numbers that you can pump out, I just don't have a great defense of it, you know, except that, like, I mean, if you need a lot of food, you know, they can do that. They can pump out a lot of stuff, but it's not great how they do it. And this hog, I'm not a hog person. So maybe I should get some more hog farmers on here to explain this gestation crate thing. But I know it's kind of to keep the mother from either eating or laying down and crushing the piglets. But it also, I don't know. I'm just not real sure of all of this, but I do know, like, I'm in favor of them making sure that pigs get a little bit of outside time, you know. I don't think it's all that great that they're just raised in, like, inside all the time. I'm not sure that's a great thing. So it doesn't matter how I feel about it. The Supreme Court upheld it, and this is until they have another sort of referendum to repeal it. I mean, that is what it is. So it might be a good thing, because there's now an incentive for, California is a huge market, the biggest market in the country. So there's a pretty huge incentive for pig farmers to change their operation now if they want to sell any of their product in California. So I guess I'm not a real fan of coercion, but I think maybe it's a step in the right direction, even though it's one of those awful government regulations. It's just, I don't know. And I may just be, I am speaking out of ignorance. Like I said, I'm not a pig guy. I just never have been, probably never will be. But I do like to eat the stuff. So whatever you got to do to keep selling it in Nevada, let me know. I think most of my pork nowadays comes from Moink Box, which is pretty good stuff. I don't know. Overall, I'm not sure how to feel about this particular proposition, but I guess you'll know that you're not getting farrowing crate raised pork in California anymore. So, in other news, they're still trying to pass a farm bill. Nothing's come out of any of the committees yet. So who knows? They're calling for more food stamps for just pretty much everyone, really, because the economy is so great. Such a great economy. We should just have more food stamps for, well, pretty much everybody. So that's how good the economy is. That, just so you know, more food stamps equals great economy. I will keep you updated as any progress is made on that. It's kind of a big deal, but until anything happens, I got nothing. And then I'm glad we're not to this point yet, or maybe I'm disappointed we're not to this point yet, but farmers prevent Germany's vice chancellor from leaving a ferry in a process that draws condemnation. So a group of farmers prevented Germany's vice chancellor from disembarking a ferry hours after the government partially climbed down on cost-saving plans that had infuriated the agricultural sector. Protests drew condemnation from both government and opposition figures. Farmers headed to a jetty in Schlutziel on the North Sea coast for Thursday afternoon ahead of the arrival of the ferry carrying Vice Chancellor Robert Habeck, following calls on social media for protests, police said Friday. Habeck had been on a personal trip to the small island of Huge. Between 250 and 300 people gathered to demonstrate. Police said it wasn't possible to arrange a dialogue between Habeck and organizers in the tense situation, so the ferry departed again. Up to 30 demonstrators tried to board the vessel, but were held back by police using pepper spray. And Habeck is a member of the Environmentalist Green Party, who is also economy and climate minister, was able to reach the mainland during the night. So they scared this poor fella. And, you know, this might be a somewhat of an unpopular opinion nowadays, but I'm kind of okay with politicians being a little bit nervous about the general public, because I mean, they've kind of earned that reason to be a little on edge. They've fucked a lot of stuff up over, well, forever, but they've become increasingly they ignore what people are actually pissed off about, and then they forge ahead with like this climate agenda, which I'm all in favor of cleaning up our how we do stuff and make this place as livable as possible for as long as possible, but the way they go about it, like pushing these electric vehicles, which I'm kind of intrigued by electric vehicles in general, particularly how it could clean up some of the smog in cities, but it's pretty obvious they're not ready for prime time yet. And they're trying to just shut down all of our consumption of oil, and like, well, you don't have anything to replace that with yet. And I know solar and wind and all that, blah, 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 but I'd rather have just like a hole in the ground, you know, a small hole in the ground and pump some stuff out of it than having, you know, acres and acres of solar panels and these obnoxious wind turbines that, you know, a lot of times they got to burn diesel to spin them, and they kill a bunch of birds and shit. And I don't know, it's just maybe not as environmentally friendly as people claim. But anyway, like, the government's gotten increasingly out of touch with what people actually want, and it's really starting to show over in Europe. The French have been all up in arms. The French farmers, the Dutch farmers, yeah, I think you're going to see it quite a bit in Canada, maybe. I don't know. I saw somewhere that Canada's death rate has gone up quite a bit. Like more so than other. I'd have to look it up for sure, so I don't want to quote any numbers, but the person I heard insinuated a lot to do with the vaccine related illnesses, and whether that's true or not, I don't know, but yeah, it could be that. It could also be the Canadian government just offering up euthanasia as a as an option. You're like, are you feeling sad and your back hurts? You could kill yourself. We'll do it for you, because we're Canada, eh? It's kind of creepy, to say the least. But anyway, they're like, so I don't know, like, but it seems that all these type of things that are pissing off the European farmers are happening over in Canada, which means they'll be happening here, or they're going to try them here. So I wouldn't mind seeing a big mob of tractors descend on Washington, D.C., but I also don't want to go through this whole January 6th process again. So, like, if you do go to D.C., like, I guess just expect to probably be arrested if you're doing it in protest of anything somewhat conservative or normal. Like if you're protesting Palestine, which I don't consider normal, even though I'm not a fan of what Israel's been doing. I don't exactly like, I'm not sure Hamas is a great one to protest for. And like that whole conflict in general, I'm finding a lot harder to care about that whole situation over there. As callous as that sounds, it's just like, man, it is not our fight. But anyway, like, if that, all that to say, like, if there do come time for like these giant type protests, particularly from our side of the political spectrum, like, do be careful, because people will, people have gone to jail for a long time for, kind of just being at the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess. It is, you cannot question the government like that. So, I wonder what happens to all these people in Europe. Like, do you see the videos of these guys just spraying shit all over, you know, just liquid manure on all these government buildings in France and in Germany and stuff. And I wonder what happens with the culprits there, these protesters. I wonder if they receive fines, or if they get, you know, they get their house raided in the middle of the night, get hauled off to jail. I wonder. So if anybody happens to know anything about that, let me know. But I wonder when that's going to happen around here. I would imagine it will. I guess on one final note, the Great Salt Lake, I guess, it'd been drying up because of the drought here lately, but they passed passed a bill, or they haven't passed it yet. They're debating a bill that would allow farmers to sell some of their water rights to send it to the Great Salt Lake, and that way it'd be, you know, I guess it's not a, I mean, taxpayers are going to pay for it, because that's how that would work. So, but at least there's an incentive for the farmers to fill up the Great Salt Lake. Because without that, there's not. why would they give you any of their water rights when they could, you know, grow alfalfa or whatever their whatever it is that they were using their water rights for? But now it seems, if this passes, and who's to say that it will, Utah's very conservative, fiscally conservative state, I would imagine, being heavily Mormon and heavily Republican. I don't know how their spending is, but you think they'd be pretty conservative. So I don't know if something like this passes or not, but it's another one where, like, although I'm not a big fan of government involvement, I mean, at least they're thinking logically through the solution that, yeah, you've got to offer the farmer something, or there's no incentive for them to send water to the, you know, to the Great Salt Lake. So anyway, at least this is like somewhat smart legislation, I guess. They don't say where the money comes from that to pay the farmer. So I don't know. I don't live in Utah, so I don't really care as much, but I just thought this was interesting. And honestly, I guess, let me know what you guys think about these particular, I'll put out the three. So the Prop 12 in California, good, bad, indifferent. And tell me why, if you answered good or bad. The banning of Chinese-owned farmland in the U.S., agree, disagree, indifferent, tell me why. And then this proposal that would pay the farmers to, or they would, you know, allow the state to buy water from these farmers to help replenish the Great Salt Lake. Is that a good idea, bad idea, or are you indifferent? And like I said, if you're anything besides indifferent, please let me know. Because if you're indifferent, well, even if you're indifferent, let me know why. Because you don't know, you don't care, or just doesn't float your boat, I guess. But anyways, yeah, let me know, because I'm interested to see how other people think about these things. And I know I have a different way of thinking about things, and a different way of arriving to a conclusion than a lot of people do. So I'm just interested to see how other people think. So I hope you guys have had a great new year so far. I'm looking forward to it immensely too. I think there's going to be some wild stuff going on, but I'm excited for stuff that I've got planned. First and foremost, we got the Elko show. We are confirmed. I talked to Emily from the stage door. We are back. It'd be February, I think, 2nd and 3rd. It's the Friday, first Friday and Saturday of February. And yes, that is 2nd and 3rd will be 7 o'clock show, 7 or 7:30. I'll be posting flyers here soon. Myself, Matt and Rachel Wilson, Cassandra Moore, Calamity Cast. I'm hoping Cope Wilson can make it. He is, last I checked, he was up in Canada still. Eric Shields just is in the process of getting married, and he will not be able to make it this year. We wish him the best of luck. Congratulations, buddy. And hopefully we get to see him again out there next year. So I'd like to do some more of these throughout somewhere else outside of Elko. Elko's awesome, but I'd like to get out there on the road a little bit and do a show or two here and there. So if you got any ideas for me, please let me know. I need to talk to Cliff Schatt. We've talked about doing something down there in Florida. It's a place I've never been, and it seems like there's a lot of cattle down there, so I might ought to go check it out. So, yeah, if you got any ideas like that, let me know. And please do bear with me as I figure out the scheduling on the podcast and whatnot. Like I said, I don't want to get overwhelmed and turn this into a job that doesn't pay very well, because that's kind of what it's starting to feel like. And I do enjoy doing this, so I'd like to keep it that way. And I don't want to hate putting something out. So, but like I said, there's a good thing I got a large back catalog. So, I will keep putting stuff out for you as long as y'all keep listening. So please do share. Like I said, social media stuff will be on pretty tight lockdown because of this election coming up. So good chance you won't see my stuff on social media, but if you do and you like it, please share it around, and that's the best way to get around that whole shadow ban stuff. So on that note, have a good week. Don't let your butt crack, and for the friggin' Farm and Ranch, this has been the friggin' Farm and Ranch Report for Monday, January 8th, 2024. Now move your ass. We're burning daylight.
Up in the morning, beneath the stars so bright, pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kind of snuffy, cold chill up your spine, it'll get your ass moving, sun, we're burning daylight. Burning daylight. Burning daylight. In the saddle till the job's done right. Burning daylight. Well, life is just a gather, and you won't catch them all. But when you ride through the gate, make sure you sit up tall. I can see the horizon, it's looking pretty bright. Well, get your ass moving, sun, we're burning daylight. Burning daylight. Burning daylight. In the saddle till the job's done right.